This episode of Sessionable is brought to you by Dave's Travel and Events Group, voted Best Tour and Transport Operator in the New South Wales Tourism Awards. If you want to know why they're award-winning, why not check out one of their great beer experiences, like their Highlander Tour, which takes you on a food and beer adventure of the Southern Highlands. This full-day tour showcases some of the quality beer, wine, mead and cider being made in the region today, and also includes a lunch featuring fresh local produce. Tours leave from Sydney, Canberra or Goulburn, and there's also a budget option for pickup in the Highlands itself. To book your tour today, visit daves.com.au.
Sessionable.
Welcome everyone to Sessionable. I'm here with a few guests. So I'm Adrian and I'm here with Liam.
Hey guys.
My co-host and three people from Batch Brewing Company. I have Andrew, Chris.
Oh, hello.
How's it going?
Yeah. And Melly.
Hey, how you doing?
How you doing? So we're here, this kind of got set up by Chris, who has released a new book.
Your first book.
Yeah.
And only book.
First and only book.
I don't expect to do this exercise again.
So the book is called Brew a Batch, and it's a homebrewing book. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah. So a couple of years ago, the folks at Cornersmith, who have a fantastic business in Marrickville, they also have the cafe primarily, but then their pickle shop, which is a commercial kitchen where they do fermentations on vegetables and all kinds of preserving of fruits and making tomato sauce with the bounty of your tomato crop, all that kind of old school stuff. And they wanted somebody to talk about homebrewing. So they run these classes in their workshop space, and I started to do a 3-hour extract brew with some hop additions and some specialty malts to 10 students at a time. And we built this little class sort of curriculum where we could get it all done and really talk while, we're waiting for water to boil and hop between hop additions. We could talk about all the raw materials and the sanitation. And from that, Cornersmith was publishing their first book, working on their second book, and their publisher found out about my class and thought that, maybe that was something that they could bring to the market. So the publisher approached me about the homebrewing book. The brief was very much that it needed to be an entry-level book. And I thought that in the homebrewing world, after talking to Melly and some of my other employees who are avid homebrewers, that there's a bit of a gap between the kit and the kilo and the all grain systems. Yeah. So I thought the way I was taught to brew at home using extract and hops and specialty malts wasn't discussed enough here and could be.
I always found a lot of homebrew books like, as a beginner, like kind of put you off homebrewing a little bit. Like it just sort of made it sound too daunting and too hard. So I think you're right. There definitely is like a bit of a gap there. And I think, I've had a chance to look at the book for a couple of weeks now. Adrian's been looking at it and we both said like it makes us want to brew again, like, because it's just so beautiful. And, I think the photography in it is a major aspect of the book, which I think you did an awesome job with.
Yeah, I mean, I had very little part in the photography. The publishing house, Murdoch, all credit to them. They assemble a fantastic team, myself excluded. I spent many months putting the book together. The folks at Batch, busted their ass to make sure that I didn't need to be at the brewery all day so that I could be home or at the corner of the bar at the Royal Albert, editing and writing. That was one component of it. But it's funny, my name is on the cover, but by no means is this, my project alone. The photography team, Chris Chen, and the folks at Northwood Green who did the creative side, they bring this stuff to life, make it look awesome. My words are big part of it, but also at the same time, like, just having that instructional stuff that you can see is just, it brings it down a notch from daunting to, approachable.
I think the other thing I really enjoyed is, like, you pretty much, it's like you're halfway through the book before you actually start brewing. And so there's a lot of, your ethos and Batch's ethos. It's a, I like, the way I see it, it's kind of got your name on it, but it's a Batch book more than a Chris book, I guess. I don't know, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Andrew and I debated, is this a Batch book? The brief that I was given by the publisher initially was that this is an entry-level homebrewing book and that they don't put, while they do work with entrepreneurs and business owners, they don't put the business
the brand
on the book. And Cornersmith was the first instance where they did that. And there was a change of hands on this project at Murdoch during the time I was, you know, writing it. So the creative went from going in one direction to 180 degrees in the opposite direction, which was very brand driven. But at the same time, they want to, you know, sell this book in New Zealand and the UK and the yeah. US and Russia, of all places. And people there don't know Batch. Yeah. So, I mean, what I wrote was not a Batch book. So to then have to rewrite it into this thing that incorporated more of the Batch storytelling was like, fuck me. No, I just finished this thing. I'm not going to go back and rewrite it. So we tried to strike a balance of, you know, having some branding in there and some storytelling and, yeah. and some, you know, payoff to them, like this concept of why do you want to homebrew so that you can, you know, enjoy a beer and show people enjoying beers in a brewery is a great way to just.
Well, Melly, I think you're a pretty good case in point for that, I guess you could say, right?
Taking homebrew into the commercial sector, I guess, yeah. And I guess, you know, touching on Chris's book as well, you know, I try to be a pretty avid homebrewer when time permitting. And the first thing I said to Chris about the book, and you said it as well, Liam, is how beautiful it is and how good it looks.
Yeah.
And I'm a visual person, and my favorite homebrewing books, there's not many of them, but I've definitely the visual ones that aren't information heavy and aren't daunting.
Mm.
You know, homebrewing should be fun. That's why you brew to, you know, enjoy the experience. And Chris's book definitely makes it look fun, and hopefully it'll encourage more homebrewers to follow that path. And
I can't read, so I need the pictures to help me make it through looking.
But I think, you know, like Adrian said, I think you're going to find a lot of people who just had to stop brewing. It's going to make more people brewing again.
I hope so. I mean, the first thing I did when I got my head around homebrewing was I'd go to the store and I'd buy my ingredients, and then I'd go to the bottle shop and I'd buy some beer.
Some Inspirato.
inspiration or something to drink after I, you know, finish and pitch my yeast. The more homebrewers out there, the more beer consumers in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, it's gotten, you know, like I've gone through it, and it's gotten me inspired to get back in. I mean, my role in the business is less about brewing beer and more, selling it.
Selling it, yeah.
And I don't consider myself a brewer. I never really have, but I had fun when I was in the brew house, like, you know, pretending to make beer. Yeah. Mashing in or doing whatever. That was pretty much my responsibility. But, like, you know, we've got some other projects and stuff like on that we want to bring to life. And I was kind of, makes me want to get back in there and actually brew when there's no responsibility based around it at the same time. So no one's saying, oh, you have to hit a certain gravity or do whatever. I get to kind of like play around.
Just have a bit of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess something at another point I said, like, you know, the start of the book is very much about your and I guess Batch's philosophy around brewing as well, which is pretty important. And it sort of touches on the last time we caught up with the two of you guys about, I think at that point you just were starting to really work with Voyager. And if I remember correctly, Just Beer just come out. And, you know, that was a big part of, the time about going back to the roots of local producers and stuff like that. And I think that sort of carries on really well with the book. I think there's some great photos of you guys at Voyager. And how has that sort of developed since then? Because it's kind of just gone a bit crazy in a good way. But
well, I mean, we're not using any international malts anymore. Well, New Zealand, but that's not international.
We're almost 100% Australian and New Zealand. There's a tiny, you know, a few skerricks of, you know, international malt hanging around, but
I accidentally bought like 300 kilos of dark crystal malt from England, and it's great malt. It's just that we only use maybe 5-6 kilos at a time, so it's going to take
just hanging around.
But I'm not going to throw it away. That's wasteful. Yeah. So we'll use it eventually. It's just going to be a while.
But I mean, like, people have really stepped up since we, you know, last spoke. Like, Voyager is just coming out. They've done a great job. Gladfield has extended their range significantly.
They've gone leaps and bounds, haven't they? Yeah.
Yeah, we were just there last week, actually. Oh, it was cool. A fantastic trip down, too. Not only was it great to get to hear their story and get a chance to kind of listen to the their ethos and everything and how they've grown and what they're doing. But man, it's in a beautiful part of the world. I mean, the mountains are right there. You got barley fields, cows, malting plant, beautiful smells from the malting plant. And then just these you know, I guess the Southern Alps or whatever they're called, just right there in the background. It's out. It's go there if you've never been. It's amazing.
Awesome.
It was pretty inspiring as well to see where our product comes from.
Well,
and then
I mean,
know,
like,
that relationship and
I mean, you know, grain's one of those few things where beer can have a sense of location, I guess, even though it's not brewed there. Like, there's a little bit of that in every single beer you do. So kind of like to have that connection of going back to where it's coming from, you know, it sounds a bit wanky, but I think it's really cool. But, yeah.
Plus, these days, a lot of people get caught up on hops as well. You know, we're in a hoppy, still in a hoppy phase.
Of course, yeah. And I mean, it's IPA day. It's we're sitting IPA here drinking nitro IPA. Like,
But it's important, you know, to...
Without the malt.
Consider the malt,
this wouldn't be there.
The soul of the beer.
Yeah. So what else, what other projects have you guys done since the last time we've caught up?
What have we done? We've...
When did we catch up last?
I'm going to say 2 years ago.
I think it was two
years
ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
I think you just opened Buckley Street.
Yeah.
When we caught up.
Yeah, 2.5 years ago maybe.
So that was pre-Melly.
I was hanging around, but I wasn't full-time at that point. Yeah. I've been hanging around for a while.
So last time we caught up with the guys, we'll put it in the show notes. You just opened up Buckley Street, which for those listening is your office and warehouse. Your cold storage.
Yeah.
Which is just around the corner from the brewery. I think that was a pretty big growth stage for Batch. I think that was a pretty big move, right?
Yeah, we took the punt to get some storage space. So we didn't have to store everything at the brewery, but also at the same time we expanded our fermenting capacity. So it was like we doubled our capacity, knowing that was something we would grow into, but we just wanted to get the project done and get all the stainless steel in and the glycol lines all set up and all that kind of stuff. And at the same time, redo the bar. So we did everything all in one hit. And I mean, since then, you know, we've just been like, we've grown our volume. We've been through two canning lines already. I'm pretty sure we had the Mahinen at that stage.
Yeah,
we would have,
Which we still have, which is a great piece of equipment. But yeah, we started off with when we bought our canning line, we went small and was too small. So we've upgraded that. We've got more delivery cars, more employees.
More staff, yeah.
We've got basically a whole new team, like the whole...
Well, the brew team's pretty much... Or you'd be
the only surviving member.
I know that's just I think... Batch has always been, I think any brewery is a bit of a, like from a brewing point of view, been a cultural breeding ground for other people who've gone on. And if you look at, I guess, alumni of ex-Batch staff, there's a lot of people who've done some pretty cool things. It's something to be very proud about. But
it's, we were talking about this at dinner in Christchurch on Thursday. And it's like, as a manager of this business, I try not to get too locked into how it's going to be because it is so fluid. Like whether that's staff or you know,
styles of beer you're making,
what the flavor of the month is, like we just chuck it all up and just see what happens and just embrace the change, be ready for the change, but also embrace it and trust the people. I mean, we found some really fantastic people in some very strange places. Like cleaning growlers in the back of the building on his Monday when he didn't want to be at his day job. Melly's now, you know, running the brewery for us.
Yeah.
And, you know, turning out some really tasty beers. We've got some cool stuff in the pipeline. We've got some cool stuff releasing now. The last thing I want to do is tell people how to do their job. I mean, we set parameters around how the beer needs to be done and you know, our DO levels and our gravities and here are the inputs, the raw materials you have to play with and why, and then let them run, you know, set a goal and give them the tools and see what they can do.
So how does that work with you, Millie? So what's your position at Batch now?
We're not big on titles.
Yeah, we're not big on titles. I brew beer.
I'm the brewer running the brewery, I guess, on the production side. We've kind of got a bit of brewers team and then a packaging team.
Yeah.
But we're all one big team
big family,
that works together.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, time has progressed pretty quickly, and these days I'm running the brewery and developing new recipes all the time, and we're still working closely with Chris on that and with Andrew, and based on, you know, where the trends are moving and what we need seasonally and stuff like that. But yeah, more recently I've had a bit more fun with, you know, creating some brand new recipes and creating some little sub brands in terms of like
the Trippy Hippies
series, and that kind of just took off, and we had a lot of fun with that. And and at the moment it's just kind of, you know, seeing where it goes and what inspiration we can come up with from all the team members. because we're all beer geeks and home brewers and
yeah,
and we all have great ideas. And yeah, as Chris said, you know, we have great I guess creative liberty to bring those ideas and try and execute them.
So how does that creative process work in, you know, a new beer? Because it's, well, what are you guys averaging as new beers at the moment? Is it still around that 10-day mark, or has it got to slow down?
Definitely not the 10-day mark. Nah. It's slowed a lot, maybe to 14 or 18 days. But
oh, fuck. Last Come time on, boys. Step it up. What's going on?
we're re-releasing beers now.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a good thing, though, because people want to see, you know, they want to see Double Rainbow come out again. Yeah. That's coming out next week.
Oh, awesome.
Which,
yeah,
by the way, the new video with Melly in it, I've got rainbows coming out of your eyes, which is pretty cool. But
a lot of post-production there.
Yeah.
Really? Post-production.
Yeah. people want to see, these re-releases from us. And that's a beautiful thing for us, because it actually, like, it's good to keep on putting out new and different beers, and we're doing that. But seeing the demand for existing beers, like it gives us a chance to brew that again and actually perfect it and continue perfecting it, and just making any tweaks.
Elsie's Azarada out at the moment, right?
Yeah,
is that still around? Yeah.
Yeah. We just put that out 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, packaged. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Hopsy Mosey today, and we've decided, well, you just kind of like come into the realization that we are going to put this out a few times a year, so we might as well just put it in the schedule and make it work, because people want to see that stuff.
Yeah.
So some beers are going to come out annually, some beers will come out quarterly, some will be twice a year. So we've kind of gotten into that. So our new beers have slowed down. But
yeah,
I have to jump in here because I just did some quick math, and we've actually accelerated to 10.2. days
what,
per
new,
beer
per new
what,
beer
yeah
like total like actual new beers
I mean,
yeah like 4.5 years at 365 days a year divided by 165 individual recipes released to date.
Jesus.
All right, okay,
fuck that.
I take that back.
That's a lot of hard work.
That's
but it's fun.
Mm,
I think it's good that we can still put out new beers and still come out with good new ideas, and we have, I mean, we've got 100 new ideas and stuff that we haven't executed yet. Mm. And that's probably, you know, the reason why some of the projects we're working on are looking at getting like a test brewery set up and that sort of thing. So actually go smaller instead of going bigger.
So is that something you're looking to do at Cinnamon Road, or?
No, we don't have the space to do it there.
Yeah.
Well, the 42 Cinnamon Road came up for lease, and we were looking at potentially putting in a little nano brewery there to test everything, but we missed out on that. Someone snapped it up because there's a couple other good sites that probably will suit the test brewery better, but we're working with those people now. And either way, we're going to have a nano kind of test brewery, maybe 350-liter kit in the not-too-distant future, probably
awesome.
At least six
Can't
months
wait.
Away. We have to order.
Yeah.
We're ready to order the brewery now. We just got to get a couple things locked away.
Are the three of you going to be fighting over who's going to be brewing there each day?
Absolutely. Or?
Well, yeah. As I said before, I get you know, maybe one day a week in there. And there's no responsibility based on anything. It's just, you know, throw some shit in. Oh, I got this crazy idea I want to do.
So is
rye,
that
all rye beer?
But to put it into context, like how exciting this is, because at the moment we don't really have any kind of real reliable, you know, pilot system or, you know, R&D system. So a lot of our, you know, crazy ideas are tested out, you know, taking inspiration from a previous batch that we've just brewed and then pulling off a bit of that and then, you know, throwing some extra hops at it or some other ingredients at it and then, you know, fermenting it separately. And then that's how we kind of test a lot of stuff at the moment. But to be able to have something that's standalone R&D system that can also pump out a decent amount of, you know, sellable beer is exciting for us, because it's going to open up a whole other avenue of...
I guess, well, like a 50-liter, you know, pilot system that you guys started with is probably the equivalent of a 350-liter now for where your growth is, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. I mean, 350 is a good number. Seven-ish kegs.
Hmm.
We intend to have enough fermentation space, so we're brewing, you know, 5-6 batches a week. This isn't just like, oh, we'll go throw something in when we get time. Like, this is a standalone economic enterprise that also has the benefit of taking our current recipes and fine-tuning them. You know, hop additions can shift by 5-10 minutes, and salt additions and all these things.
Yeah.
We can really play around and test a lot of things. while at the same time being as creative as we want. Like, not to take it back to the book and get stuck there, but like, creativity is the reason that I love this business and why I love homebrewing. And for us, this 350 liter system is our version of a homebrewing kit where we can, you know, throw Fruit Loops in there, whatever the hell, you know, inspiration we want, and not have to worry about Joe moving 21 kegs.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's liberating and it's fun, and it's also going to strengthen our current beers so that when market kind of rationalizes the 450 brewers that are currently operating now, and demand starts to catch up with the supply of beer, you know, hopefully our beers will be, you know, fine tuned to the point where we can go justify spending money on the next big batch project, which,
yeah,
you know, is a couple of years down the line, but is definitely in planning already. And this is just going to make us, you know, better positioned to do that.
Yeah. So for now we're going smaller instead of bigger, but
smaller to get bigger. Like, yeah. It's very against the grain, I guess, of the trends at the moment. But I think it's really cool. Like,
gotta go down to get up. No, gotta get down to go up. There's a song. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
But
get down to go up.
Yeah, gotta get down to go up.
Anyway. I think you raised some two really good points there. It's about the fact that you get to go even insanely crazier, and I'm sure the rest of the brew team and yourself would be glad you don't have to process as much fruit sometimes to do some of these crazy beers, but or more expensive experimental beers. But then, you know, touching on fine-tuning some of, I guess, you know, like your West Coast IPA and American Pale Ale, and have they changed much over the years? Or are they pretty much the same? I guess your malt would definitely have changed with...
The malt's changed. You know, the ratios of things that we use have changed to make sure that we're, you know, starting gravities and finishing gravities are what they used to be, but they're incorporating different raw materials. The hops have changed a little bit, like a lot less, you know, early additions, and it's more weighted towards later additions and dry hopping. But that's fairly subtle. But no, not dramatically.
Yeah. And is it something, are you precious about them not changing, or are you actually really keen to fine tune them, or sounds like you really want to just make them better?
I think they do have room for improvement. Goal,
yeah. Yeah, of course, right?
Everything, yeah, every always does. But our 1,000th batch was a lot of fun. It just landed in the calendar in a way that we could do this beer, and, you know, the premise of what was two American immigrants, you know, what we drank when we were in America, and trying to localize it a bit.
Yeah.
You know, that incorporated some Vic's Secret, and, you know, we thought maybe if that went nuts, would we consider changing our American Pale Ale? And we had, yeah, this really deep moral, you know, kind of debate around whether or not we would or should, and we haven't. Maybe the debate will rage on, but for now it's American Pale Ale's locked in.
But yeah, I think, you know, being able to do every now and again, do a variation of American Pale Ale and celebrate some other stuff is really good fun as well. And I think, you know, you're at a point now where you've had a few pretty big milestones, like 1,000th brew. I mean, how many years? We're coming into 5, 6 years now? Where are we at?
5 years in December.
Yeah. Shit.
We have a few fun pale ales coming out too, I think. We're definitely going to be playing around in the pale ale space, it's going to be a bit of fun. So different yeast, different hops, different malt bills and stuff like that. But
so, I mean, it is like, you know, we're sitting here and it's IPA day and we're drinking Hopsy Mosey, which is Nitro IPA.
Nitro Mosaic IPA.
Mosaic IPA.
With some lactose, yeah.
It was packaged 4 hours ago.
Fuck. Tasting good.
Yeah.
where does that come about? Because it's not the first time you've done it, but I love, like, malt or non-dark beers that are on nitro, and, you know, there's this weird juxtaposition between the malt and or the hop character and the malt character coming out with nitro, but, you know, I think it works really well. But
was this a, this was initially a,
this was the Modus thing,
wasn't
it?
The Modus collaboration? Yeah, with DJ. Don't give Grant any... credit to
Grant.
This, yeah. But dull DJ, dull DJ, maybe Grant if you're listening.
In
I love
fairness,
Grant
I'm pretty
shit.
Sure DJ just came down and went, "Yeah, that sounds good."
Yeah. Yeah, we. I don't know, man. Like, I forget how that came out. I think we just wanted a nitro IPA that was really easy to drink because we love. I mean, I love nitro beers. Chris loves this beer. I think this is one of your favorite beers.
I love
isn't
this
it?
Beer.
Yeah, it's one of my dad's favorite beers.
Yeah.
Too.
Cool. And you guys always have nitro because you're always pouring Elsie. So
yeah, that's another interesting story. Like, there's a lot. Nitro is really hard, and I think a lot of people We've just been persisting with it in general. And I feel like we're in a, sorry, I'm like kind of taking off.
No, go for it. Yeah, yeah.
I feel like we've gotten to a really good place with Nitrogen right now.
Do you think from a venue point of view, that people caught up with Nitro again? Or?
Definitely. From 4 years ago, yes. Yeah. When we first released Elsie, we were on a steep learning curve to understand the nitrogen molecules getting into the beer and then how they're going to pour and, you know, all this other kind of stuff and the pressure. And so I remember going to pubs constantly and saying, well, you know, they're just used to their Guinness, their Diageo rep or whatever, actually just coming in, they had someone do it for them. They never had to worry about it.
Yeah.
And so we were kind of going through and educating, the pubs about how it should be poured and what needs to happen. But we were also learning ourselves. But it's gotten to a stage now where we don't have too many issues. I think everyone kind of gets, how you're supposed to pour nitro beer, but, you know, packaging it is a different story.
That's a big challenge.
Yeah. And that's been really tough. And I feel like we've just, come out, had a little bit of a breakthrough, in packaging nitrogen and nitrogen beers. And it's a lot easier for the guys to package it now. And plus the cans, it's also better on the cans too, yeah, and stuff like that. So,
well, this winter season, we've been packing like a shitload of Elsie.
Yeah.
So it's made us, you know, really dial in our process and perfect that and, have a really consistent nitro beer. And then it's, you know, trickled on to beers like this.
Well, yeah, it gives you the strength to do these types of things as well. I
yeah, because
right?
To put nitro beer in a can is and have it, you know, pour perfectly is a pretty tricky thing to do. And we've invested a lot of time and money and technology and research and training. And
we didn't get there initially and immediately. I mean, it took a couple iterations for us to refine it. I mean, you can't put the burden on the consumer to know how to pour your beer. You need to make it so that it pours the way it's intended to. Those consumers who know how to pour a beer will always have a better experience than those who don't. And nitrogen is definitely an important, you know, thing to understand. But it's on us to make sure that anybody who cracks a can and pours it can still have a good experience. And we are there now.
Yeah, correct.
But it took us a little toing and froing and whatever. That's all learning curves. But the nitrogen on an IPA, like, to me, it was always about aroma. And if you're forcing all of the aroma out of the beer at the tap, then how are you going to enjoy the aroma as you sip it? But it fucking works.
It works. Yeah,
it
does.
It works, yeah.
And it's fucking smashable, too. Like, very smashable, yeah.
Bitterness is lower. The perceived bitterness is lower because it's not sharp and carbonated, so it's...
I mean, I think
yeah. So you get a 6.4% IPA that you're just like, it's dangerously drinkable.
Yeah, it is, and as I can tell by my empty glass, it is very dangerously drinkable.
I mean, lactose and nitro is, you know, winning combo, obviously.
Yeah.
I was in the States for a few months at the beginning of the year and went to a few places in Brooklyn. And one of our former employees, Sean, is trying to set up a brewery in Brooklyn, and he took me around a little bit. And we went to one place that lactose and the double dry hop. On 20 of their taps, probably incorporated 15 taps.
Like New England with lactose.
Kind of. Every fucking beer they do is double dry hop with lactose.
Oh, shit.
Jesus.
That's a tough. The whole milkshake IPA thing.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
We were there years before.
Yeah. Cutting edge. Yeah.
I love lactose, but I think it needs to be used with a bit of restraint.
It's all about balance, right? I guess on a complete opposite tangent then, you know, it was a really cool thing when, you know, BrewCon was on a couple of months ago and I got to take a whole bunch of people from across Australia or in the world who were in town for BrewCon and do those tours. And we did a funky and sour tour, which we got to spend some time with you, Chris, talking about your kettle sour program. And, you know, that's something I never really thought about, but in like doing this tour, I was like, you know what? You guys probably have the biggest in the most kettle sour program in Australia. Like
we're trying to get our hands on a second hot liquor tank that we can dedicate to just souring
just
beers.
Yeah.
Temperature
control. It's a pretty labor intensive process.
Leave it in there.
Well, it's a time intensive process as well, I guess.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Well, yeah, more so time intensive. Yeah. But it's worth it.
Like, are you at a point where they need to invent new fruits because you don't have done everything already?
Hold on.
No.
We found one last week. Yeah. I'm really excited about this.
Yeah.
So our New Zealand trip was designed
intended. A Feijoa sour?
Just inspiration in general. So spend time with your suppliers and understand what they do and experience other things and I think that paid off. I think we came home with a few notes on ideas that we're going to try to incorporate.
Chris was like, we have to go to this place for dinner. And it was, I don't know, 8-course degustation or something like that. Not typically my thing. Fantastic food. It was awesome. Roots in Littleton. And the major piece of inspiration we got was from the cocktail we had as soon as we got there. That's just, and it was the Golden Kiwi. And Golden Kiwis are amazing.
Nice. I don't know if I've ever had one.
Especially in Kiwi Land.
Yeah. But like at the end of the night, they brought us out some an actual Golden Kiwi, and we were just biting straight into it, not worrying about the skin and eating it.
Burn all.
Like, oh, this is fantastic. It was amazing. It was amazing. So yeah, Melly's got some ideas.
Awesome.
We're gonna see if we can make something happen with that. So not all the fruits are done. We thought they were, they're not.
We thought they were, so then we brewed a Gozer instead.
Oh wow. Yeah.
So we got to a point where we thought, okay, let's do something different with a tart beer. And I came back from spending a lot of time in Mexico and drinking a lot of margaritas and like the whole salt combination.
Yes.
So that was another way of, I guess, reinventing the same approach to creating a kettle sour, tart. Tart beer, and then using that in a different way. So yeah, we're always finding either a new fruit or a new way to reinvent the kettle sour. So
I think looking to what you can get your hands on for us is where we try to find our inspiration. I mean, we worked our way through homebrewing books, and they're a great resource. But eventually, you brew every style, and you kind of start thinking what else is out there.
Yeah.
So looking to your suppliers, whether it's fruit or malt or hops or whatever, or just having, flavor experiences in different contexts, just find ways to make that relevant to what you're doing and pull it in.
And this is where this, nano setup is going to be awesome too, because there are, they'll just allow us to just immediately test things and just say, crazy idea. All right, well, fucking do it tomorrow. I mean? Like, just make it happen.
Do it while the inspiration's there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We've been talking with Tom, one of our other brewers, Asati. I'm not pronouncing it right.
Asati.
Yeah. For ages. I mean, we really want to make that happen. But we're not prepared to do a 1,200 liter brew.
Nah, fuck that.
Let's do, 350. Fuck yeah, let's do it. So, and a shitload of other ideas. So stuff like that's, while the inspiration's there, let's just make it happen. You know what I mean? Let's strike while the iron's hot. And that's what I love about it. That concept. But with the Golden Kiwi, we kind of just knew immediately when we had it, we're like, this is a 1,200.
Yes.
You can do it straight away.
Yeah.
It's going to work fine. It'll be great.
Worst comes to worst, the three of you will just drink it all anyway, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are some times when it's going to work.
You can just go straight for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So,
I guess talking about sour beers, you've got a pretty cool event coming up, which I guess you haven't really had a chance to talk about yet for Sydney Beer Week.
Not too much. I'm trying to get the artwork and the banner done so we can really promote it, which is it's going to be really cool when it does.
But I mean, I guess I've just been going to print with the program for Beer Week, so I've had a chance to see it. But do you want to tell everyone what are you doing?
Well, So Sourfest. October 28th, I think.
Yep.
The first Sunday of Sydney Beer Week. We're going to do, we'll have probably between 8 and 10 of breweries who do sours on site in the car park next to the brewery. And it's only sours. That's all you can get. We'll have a little bar where you can get like palate cleansers like Just Beer or American APA. Which is important because if you have enamel stripping sour, you need something to reset your palate.
You need to balance the pH in your stomach again.
Yeah, exactly. So we reserve the right to
sell. Like quickies or some Tums or something.
Yeah. Actually, that's a good point. I want to make sure the food trucks somehow balance out that acidity in your stomach or something like that.
Some nice rich fatty meats to go along with all this acid.
Yeah, true. So it's... As far as I know, no one's really done it. Chris and I were talking about it and got really excited by the idea of having something that's only sours. So we do a lot of sours and we keep on pushing them out, and we feel like we kind of own that space a bit. So why not put on a sour fest? So that was kind of our big idea to do something during Sydney Beer Week and use the car park for the first time and test cancel out to see if they're actually, how easy it is for us to put events on in the car park and actually have a really, make the brewery something a bit bigger and have a bit more fun. So I'm really excited about it. I think we're going to have a lot of great sours, good food, you know, there'll be cornhole, games, play, music, stuff like that, family friendly. Hopefully the weather holds out and we'll be sweet.
And we got a few people locked in?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. We'll have between last time I checked, it'll probably be about 10 people, which is 10 yeah. breweries, which is the actual perfect amount. So we had 20 people initially interested, but then, you know, people.
What I really like about it is, like, you know, I think, you know, you guys really do in some way own some of the sour space, but you have your own way of doing it, and then other people have their own way. It, like, even if you're doing a fruited kettle sour, like, yours is going to be different from someone else's. So I think it's actually, even though you're defining it as being a sour thing, there's actually going to be quite a lot of diversity, which I think is really fun.
Yeah, I think so. I think there will be. Yeah. 100%.
Are you able to name anyone who's going to be there at this stage?
Yes. I'm trying to think who's going to be there. Sauce will be there. Bridge Road's going to be there.
Yep.
Redwood Distribution's going to have a stand there because they import some sours from America. Bucket Boys, Wildflower, and a couple others.
Cool. Awesome.
I love how you're testing out Council at Sydney Beer Week.
Yeah, it's the best time.
Yeah.
Why not?
No, they're cool. I mean, like, Council's been really supportive of us, so, like, I'm actually not concerned about that in any way, shape, or form at the moment. Yeah. They've shown a lot of support lately, so, yeah, it should be all good. And we're partnering with a company that's actually going to – they know what they're doing.
Yeah, sweet.
Yeah.
I guess on that with Council, I guess Indian West has had some pretty big changes going on at the moment. Or I guess – and there's even nationwide, there's been some cool changes that the Indian West has really been – at the heart of. Do you want to talk a bit about that?
Yeah, well, so, I mean, we've had licensing changes. So we're going to be able to operate now. There's basically like a brewery license. So it allows us to sell, you know, pints or something if you want to, but you still have to serve your own beers, which is good. That's something that they've just brought in for all the breweries, and it's going to be a trial for the Inner West. I think it's starting in September. Mm-hmm. And then, New South Wales Planning has just announced, an artisan premises in there. It's not a license, but our artisan premise in their planning. So that means that we can have, restaurants or, a cafe or something like that attached to the brewery if we want.
Yeah, cool.
And I think it has some, implications on retail space, although it's still pretty top line. I mean, we don't know all the details. So stuff like that's been pretty good. You know, and then of course there's a lot more breweries in the area now anyway, and a lot more people coming into the area. So the area, I mean, like, well, since we were one of the few places in the Merrickville area, or sorry, the only place in the Merrickville area when we opened up, and now we've got, I don't know how many breweries you've got now. Nine, 10, I think. Or something?
Yeah, I keep saying seven, but I haven't counted lately. But yeah, maybe if you venture into Enmore and grab, you know, St. Peter's, and it's nine. Yeah.
Pretty insane. Yeah.
But the Inner West Brewery Association, like, you know, Pete from Wayward and Richard from Young Henry's and Andrew have been busting their ass. You know, the Inner West Brewery Association, it says Inner West in the name, but the reality is we're trying to make changes that, you know, create a precedent for any council in the whole, you know, of Australia. So, you know, our friend down in Mittagong, who's dealing with some crap from his council, who says he's not following the rules, like, he can now point and say, no, I am. I'm doing exactly what the rule says, because these guys, you know, up in the Inner West have managed to get New South Wales to write the law to match what, you know, what's happening. So
yeah, and that's a great point, actually. There's a huge variation in what local officials thought was acceptable and not acceptable, and now that
even in the same council, across councils,
so that kind of starts to create an even playing field for everybody, and also local councils in New South Wales and even the national or federal government now realize that, you know, we are adding value to the communities. And we are not. There's this hangover. I talk about this all the time. This hangover, the 6 o'clock swill, you know, from like 40 years ago or whatever, like that, where, you know, beer drinkers are barbarians and blah blah blah.
Yeah, with the lowest common denominator. Yeah. Which is like,
it's bullshit.
Not anymore. It is.
It's just not. Well, like, it's not the case.
Like, walk around any brewery in the Inner West on a Saturday or a Sunday and tell me they're the lowest common denominator. Man, there's like families and kids and dogs, and everyone's fucking sitting there behaving themselves.
Yeah.
I've never seen a glassing. I've never seen a fight. I've never seen anything in those breweries. And I, as you guys all know, we all spend a lot of time in breweries on the weekends.
Exactly. So, I mean, like, it's kind of like to now actually publicly be acknowledged that they don't think that is a really nice thing. It's a shame it's taken this long to get there, but still, you know, we're making progress, and that's good.
So. Once it becomes a big enough part of the economy, they can't ignore it.
So. Yeah, true.
I think, you know, Marrickville in the Inner West actually kind of reminds me a lot of, like, the Bermondsey Beer Mile in London, where, like, I don't know, like, the amount of people that are from all walks of life that are coming to the Inner West to go and walk around and try different beers on a Saturday and a Sunday at the moment, it's pretty insane. It's awesome. It's great. But, you know, with that becomes a bit of challenges as well, and, like, there's growing pains. But I think, you know, like I said, I've never seen an issue in any single brewery.
I think one of the fantastic things about this culture and this industry are that we're all looking to do the right thing for ourselves and for our customers and for our employees and the whole community.
Yeah.
And we're not looking to push the boundaries and create an environment where people can do stupid shit. Like, you know, we are our own biggest enemy if we start to get greedy and do stupid things. So, you know, everyone is behaving themselves because we're all creating these spaces where people want to come and relax and behave themselves.
Well, everyone's got a bit of their chip in the shoulder because everyone's being treated like a bunch of barbarians, and we're trying to prove we're actually pretty civilized.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Oh, it's good. I take my hat off to every, you know, brewery owner and every taproom manager, because it's on them to make sure that it all happens the way it's supposed to. So we've got fantastic team looking after our place, and, you know, on a Saturday when it's pumping and, you know, sometimes a knucklehead or two does wander in, they always treat them with dignity and respect. And, you know, the knuckleheads walk out saying, thank you for a great experience.
Yeah.
And that makes me happy.
Sessionable.
Ever been in the work function and it's just cheap drinks on a boat for like the fifth year in a row? And you think to yourself, ugh, I wish I was doing something fun. Well, Dave's Travel and Events Group can help you out with that. With Dave's Events, they can hook you up with some great team building activities like axe throwing. Or they can curate a nice degustation matched with some good beer. Or they can even help you brew your own beer for your staff and clients. Whatever your needs, Dave's Events can customize an awesome local beer experience for your workplace. So it doesn't have to be just drinks in a boat. Although it can totally be drinks in a boat. For more info, check out daves.com.au.
I think that's a good note to start wrapping up.
I think so. And I forgot to mention to you guys that we always try and do some recommendations at the end of an episode. And I'm really bad because I spring it on everyone. I never say anything. But we're going to try and see if we can do a beer and a non-beer recommendation. So non-beer can be like anything in the world. It could be
I'll go first.
Yeah.
Non-beer recommendation, go to Roots in Littleton.
Damn, I was going
to
say.
That's why you jump in first.
Beer recommendation, the last two beers I've paid for were both Sonic Prayer cans from this particular pub, the Royal Albert.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Awesome. Adriano?
So a couple of interstate recs for me. I was on holidays recently, and I went to Hobart and Melbourne. Had an awesome time. Really good food and beer at both places. So I'm going to recommend a food place in Melbourne. It's called Butcher's Diner. So it's like a fast food diner. And apparently I've heard that it's a butcher that provides all the high quality meat to all the high end restaurants and stuff. Decided to kind of start their own fast food joint to kind of get rid of off cuts and stuff. So you can get off cut steaks and, you know, char grill, ox tongue and octopus and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Really bloody good. I was there for 4 nights and I went there 4 times. So that's how much I enjoyed that place.
Wow.
Yeah, really, really, really good steaks. I wouldn't be able to tell you what the names of the cuts are, but
yeah,
they're all awesome.
Just get there and figure it out for yourself.
Yeah.
And beer-wise, I'm going to recommend something from Tasmania, a 2-minute-tall collaboration with a winery whose name I forget, and it's called either Brian Bitter or Bitter Brian, and I believe it's like something like 40%. Riesling juice mixed with beer, like funky beer.
Awesome.
It's fucking awesome. I had that on my birthday, and yeah.
Happy birthday.
Enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
All right, I'll go. I've been watching on Netflix an awesome, series called The Defiant Ones, which is about Interscope Records and stuff like that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, like Dr. Dre and all that stuff. And it's, I haven't finished it, but it's really cool. So it starts off with like, you know, is it Jimmy Iovine?
Jimmy Iovine?
Yeah.
Iovine?
Yeah. Who's like a, and he's like, you know, a record producer, and it's like, tells his story. And then it sort of goes into the whole East Coast, West Coast rap battle shit. And like, it's like basically the guys who did Interscope Records.
It's so a, then, an unlikely pairing of two musical people.
Like Dr. Dre and this like little, Italian
New York guy,
like,
crazy.
With the greatest work ethic ever.
Oh my god,
he's such a hard worker.
Yeah, so it's really cool. And like, man, the dude was dating Stevie Nicks. Like, he's got to be pretty balling, right? Like, goddamn.
You know what I thought was the most interesting part about that series is when he was like trying to get this. He did. He had like Sunday get-togethers at his house where everyone was just playing football.
Yeah,
and so he had Ice Cube and Bon Jovi, all playing, you know, like touch football against each other. I was like, wow, that's pretty intense.
Yeah,
it's funny. That's a good series.
Yeah, so I'm like halfway through at the moment, but thoroughly enjoying it. So that's something worth watching.
That gives me a good idea on what I'm going to talk about.
Don't beat me to it.
I'm next.
B1. I don't know. I was struggling with the B1 at the moment. I haven't really been drinking that much lately.
Bullshit.
No, I haven't. I had something and I've lost it. But, oh no, yeah, I've got it. One thing I had, which is an oldie that I went back to and really enjoyed, was Mayday Hills from Bridge Road, the grape. Has anyone tried the grape?
I haven't had that.
So it's, you know, the Mayday Hills range.
The blueberry and...
Yeah, so Mayday Hills has all their Brett Ferment wood photo beers, which is what they'll be pouring at Sourfest. And they did one that's with Sangiovese grape must, and it's really fucking good.
Is that on at the end of the bar here or no?
It's probably about the third or fourth release.
I think we might
back.
Have a keg downstairs, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. If you see it around, even bottles or anything, grab it. Because it's like, there's some amazing wineries around Beechworth, like Gioconda and all these places. I'm not sure where you got the Sangiovese grape must from, but it's fucking awesome. Yeah. So that's my recos.
I don't have anything beer-wise because a little bit overwhelmed at the moment. Can't really put anything out there, but non-beer-wise, I'm pretty sure everyone's probably been there already, but while on our trip in New Zealand to visit Gladfield, we delved into the podcast. This is S-Town.
Shit Town.
From the makers of Serial and This American Life.
Yeah.
And like Andrew was pretty familiar with it. I never got into it, but...
Was that while you were driving?
While we're driving.
That's awesome driving.
And
I like to go and look at the stars. Yeah. And I think out there, we're just little peanuts.
Did he remind
galaxy.
You of that, the old dude from Family Guy?
No, he reminded me of...
everyone you grew up with? Because you're from the South?
I'm very familiar with that accent. Now, he did not remind me of Family Guy. It reminds me of Zach Galifianakis' role in The Campaign.
Yeah.
So if you ever watch The Campaign, it's the same accent. That's the first thing I went to. I thought it was hilarious.
But that's a really good podcast.
I'm hooked.
Have you finished it?
I'm almost, I think there's only seven episodes and I'm halfway through seven now. So.
Nice. Oh, that means you, since the plane, you haven't listened to it at all. You're really halfway through on the plane.
It takes me 10 minutes to get to two. It takes me 10 minutes to get to work. So each episode's 50 minutes. So
it's a week to get through an episode.
So I'm doing pretty well.
Yeah.
I was going to use this as Shit Down because that was my latest thing that I talked Melly into listening to. So fuck you.
You already recommended it to me.
No? I did.
Yeah, passing it on. Yeah.
So I don't get to get out much because I got a couple kids. But I went to and I was going to talk about Roots, but I had a date night at Sidecar, Gasoline Pony's little side project the other night, and that was really good. It was nice. Food was good. Good atmosphere, and we had a good time. And that's basically what it was, like nice little mushroom kind of like. Mm. Sort of layman's terms, like mushroom mac and cheese. No, it wasn't that at all, but that's the only way I can describe it. A nice, really nice salmon dish and some croquettes. It was fantastic.
Where is Sidecar?
Right next to Gasoline Pony. It's so like a shop removed.
Next building over?
Yeah,
cool.
But yeah, I enjoyed it, and it's kind of nice, and the owner's doing a good job there and that sort of thing.
Cool.
As far as beer, if I have to, I'm going to do two beers. One is the Huge Kahuna I absolutely love that we've put out. And I haven't been drinking a lot of other people's beers at the moment, unfortunately. I need to get back into that. But I've been happy with our range, so I've just been drinking with him what we've been doing. Yeah. I'm also really happy with Ginny Pine, too.
I love Ginny Pine.
But if I have a a non-batch beer that is always my go-to because it is a source of inspiration for me is Innocent Gun. And I haven't had it in a while, but that beer, every time I drink it, I really love it. It's just nice and smooth, and it's got that nice kind of vanilla oak character to it. And it makes me, now that I'm talking about it, I need to go and drink it again.
Nice one. Any last beer recommendations, Millie?
Not really. I'm pretty excited about the Gozer that we've been brewing.
Yeah, sweet.
So, yeah. That's, yeah.
When's that coming out?
Packaging it next week.
Yeah. Awesome. In the next week.
And what was the derivative of that you did as well?
So, yeah, we pulled off a little bit of that keg before we put some fruit in it. And again, another inspiration I took away from Mexico. When you drink tequila in Mexico, they don't give you lemon and salt or lime and salt. They give you orange and chili salt.
Oh, numb.
If you go to a good tequila place where they serve mezcalas, that's how they serve it.
That sounds awesome.
So that was my inspiration. So I've got a little keg carving up in the fridge, which is
goes
with orange chili. And we also aged some oak staves in tequila. Threw that in there as well. So I recommend tasting that if it ever gets its way into the bar.
Fuck yes, that sounds amazing.
Wouldn't it be cool if we had a 350-liter brewery and do this stuff all the time?
And if we can import some tequila barrels.
We can totally do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys. I think we'll wrap it up so we can go pound some beers.
Yeah,
but thank you very much, guys. Pleasure to have you back. And Melly, welcome. Where can people go grab your book?
Batchbrewingco.com.au. And then click on shop. You can buy it from us. Booktopia, Amazon, all major retailers.
Awesome.
It's everywhere.
And are you selling it at the brewery?
And at the brewery. Tasting room, yes. And if you're lucky enough to find me there, bring a pen and I'm happy to sign it.
Oh, there you go.
That gets you excited.
Does that cost extra? Or
no, just a hug.
Yeah. Cheers, guys. Thank you very much. And enjoy the rest of the IPA, yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, you
thank
too.
You. Thank you for having us, guys.
And check out sessionrule.net for all our contact details if you want to get in touch with us and all our social media. Cheers.